is any other race, the most you're going to climb is maybe 2 or 3,000 feet at a time. And Grand Canyon, you're climbing 5,000 feet all at once. And then you have some flat in the bottom, but you got those monster climbs at both ends. And so that's tough. Another tough thing was just not having any aid stations. Those 43 miles back to your car. So that was tough. They did have water on two places in the canyon, so that made it a little bit easier.
You're listening to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, and this is Trail Talk, where we have casual conversations with all kinds of runners. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultra runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation will go. So if you're ready, let's get started. This is Trail Talk. Welcome. If you're watching this live on Facebook, this is an hour later than normal, but my guest today is Crystal McGee. I saw that she had done a fastest known time on the Grand Canyon and thought that she would be a great guest to talk to. So, Crystal, welcome to the show. This is the Ultramarathon Mindset live Facebook and podcast. So, awesome. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Yes. So what I usually start out asking people, asking our guests is to give a little bit of background. If you meet somebody for the first time running the trail with them, how do you introduce yourself? What are the things you say about yourself when you meet someone new?
I don't usually start out with myself.
I know how that works.
I'm Crystal McGee. I've been running for, probably 8 years now, pretty consistently, and started out running road marathons, and now I just run trails, and I love
it. Okay. So what made you decide to start running?
I think a long time ago, maybe when I was like 12, I was reading in a Shape magazine or something that someone had run a marathon, and I just thought, that would be cool. That would be the coolest thing if I could run a marathon. Mm-hmm. And then I don't think I thought about it for like 10 years after that.
Okay. So you were 12 years old when you thought about running a marathon.
Yeah, but it wasn't like something that I aspired to do. It was just something that I thought would be cool if that actually happened to me, as if it was going to happen. And then I started running after I had two kids, just running to get back in shape after being pregnant. And I ran my first 10K and I thought that it was the coolest thing ever because I had ran 6 miles without stopping. And then I just kind of got hooked after that, did a half marathon, and then it was a few years of running before I tried a marathon, but just kind of hooked me in.
So what was that like kind of a natural progression that you, when you started running, that was like you brought back that childhood thing of like, oh yeah, the marathon's kind of where I'm going to head for?
Yeah, but I remember talking to people thinking, oh, I can run 6 miles, but there's no way I'm running a marathon. Mm-hmm. They would say, well, if you can run a half marathon, you can run a marathon. I'm like, well, that doesn't make any sense. So I just talked to people. Everyone I knew that were runners, I would just pick their brains and try to get all the information I could. And just, I think I ran, my longest run was 8 miles, and then I went and ran a half.
Okay.
And I was like, whoa, you really can. You don't have to run the whole, you don't have to train the whole distance to the race.
Yeah.
So it's funny, like those small things you pick up on when you don't know anything about running.
Yeah. Yeah. So did you like do research and try to find out all that you could once you started, or was it something you just kind of went out and did and kind of did it by feel?
Yeah, no, I'm completely type A, 100%. I read all the books. I had training plans that I would do exact mileage on exact days, and I had workouts that I did. And I don't do that anymore, but that's how I did.
So you're type A, and you were able to get away from that. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Yep. So how did you make that switch?
Honestly, I just kept getting injured. I just kept getting injured because I wasn't listening to my body. I was running the mileage no matter what. I wasn't getting enough sleep. I was waking up early every single morning and running, and I just kept getting injured on the road. I was running too fast. And so, yeah, when I started in trails, I just kind of, I had a hamstring injury that lasted for probably 2 years, and I just kind of gave up like being fast anymore. And I thought, well, what can I do? How can I progress as a runner without being fast and without trying to best my marathon time? Because at that point I couldn't, I was unable to do speed work without getting re-injured. And so I just gradually built my mileage on trails, and I would even hike. And I just kind of got into ultra running from there, just getting longer.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
So when you made the switch from, it was kind of because of injuries, you made the switch from road to trails. Mm-hmm. Did you then up your distance to doing ultra marathons, or did you do shorter trail runs first?
I think the first, I'm trying to remember the first race. I actually think the first trail race I did was a 50K.
Okay.
So I think I did jump right to ultras. I think I did a half marathon first, and then I went to 50K. So it was the Red Mountain. They have a half marathon, so I did that first. They do that here in St. George.
Okay. And you live in Utah, which is, I didn't see where in Utah you live, but it sounds like you would have some pretty good trails there to run.
Yeah, I live in St. George, and we have the best trails around.
Yeah, a lot of elevation, a lot of mountains. Is it high?
Not a lot of elevation. You can go up. It's like a short 30-minute drive, and you can get some good elevation. Zion is only 45 minutes away.
So oh, wow. Okay.
Run in Zion. So we just have so many options here.
Yeah. Yeah. On my list of places to visit, I was looking to go to Moab. My wife has talked several times about going to Moab, and I was like, yeah. Oh, yeah, I'd love to go run trails there.
Moab is amazing. I just did the whole enchilada. So you can get like a shuttle ride to the top, and you start in the mountains
uh-huh.
and you end in Moab. So you get the best of both worlds all wow. at once. Yeah.
So how far is that? How far is that one?
It was 28 miles, I think. And it was pretty much all downhill. I don't think I've ever lost that much vertical in a run before. I think I lost like 5,000 feet of elevation. So it was pretty cool though.
That's cool. So you ran 50K. Did you then do longer distances?
Yeah. So I did a couple of 50Ks, and then I did my first longer. I signed up for Javelina 100. And then I think I got injured and I was unable to do it. And so I deferred my entry till the next year. Mm-hmm. But in between there, I did Zion 100K, and it's a lot harder as far as vertical and stuff like that. So I did that one first, and then I went back to Javelina.
Okay.
Thinking it would be easy, but Javelina is deceptively difficult.
So how is Javelina deceptively difficult? Because that was on in my dreams for 2020. That was kind of going to be my big race that I was going to try to get into.
Yeah.
And then of course, I with all of the things that happened, I wasn't able to go. I mean, I know they had the race, but
yeah, it's I think it's a mind game, because you go into it thinking there's no vertical, so it's going to be a piece of cake. And I mean, there's the heat. The heat doesn't really bother me, so I don't think that really had any effect. But I just kept feeling like I had to run the whole time because there was no steep ascents. And so you just kind of push yourself. And
okay.
It just felt hard. I think I wasn't recovered. I think I overtrained a little bit for it. And I think that had an effect on it. But other than that, it was just kind of a mind game, because I felt like I was running the whole time. There wasn't much faster walking, but it was a good race. I want to go back and do it again.
Yeah. So I'd seen, it looked like there were some ups and downs. I mean, you went down through, I mean, it wasn't like yeah. totally flat.
I mean, every time you run that long, you're going to get some vertical by the end, but
right.
But compared to like Zion, where you're, you know, climbing with your hands sometimes.
Right.
It's definitely not anything like that.
Yeah. And so I look at the elevation profile, and it looked like there was, you know, looks like there was part of the loop would go up and then part of it would come down.
Yeah. But
there was a whole lot of elevation gain.
Yeah. That. It's pretty flat. It's really smooth, not technical at all. but it's nice. There's a lot of people, lots of people show up. There's people to talk to the whole way. So it's fun.
Well, that I've been kind of considering whether I want to put that on my hopes for this next year.
Yeah, do it.
I was excited about doing that. I've got a race that I was did not finish in the last year. I was going back for redemption this year, and we had rainstorms and the trails turned slick, and so I was not able to beat the cutoff because I just couldn't go any faster. But yeah. So I'm signed up for redemption for that.
What race is that?
Carolina would be about a month and a half after that. So I'm like, okay, I could do that. So
what race is that?
Before? The Hawk 100 is, I live in Kansas City, and so it's Lawrence, Kansas.
Oh, okay.
So home of the Jayhawks is the college town here. So they call it the Hawk 100.
Cool.
It's very, not a lot of elevation, but half of the trails are very, very technical.
Yeah.
It's challenging. I'm looking forward to getting back and doing that again this coming year. Javelina is one that's been on my list. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I think everyone has to do it. It's just one of those races you got to get in.
Yeah. That's good to know that it's a fast course.
It is fast. Just don't go there thinking it's going to be easy.
Well, 100 miles is never easy.
Right. Yeah.
Sorry. So you, was that, did you do 100 miles at Javelina, or was it the 100K?
Nope. I just did the 100K.
Okay. So you did, I know that I saw that one of the reasons that you came to you popped up on my radar was that you did a fastest known time, an FKT on the Grand Canyon this year. So, which is almost 94 miles, and you crossed the canyon twice, if I remember right.
Four times. Yeah.
You went.
Rim,
yeah, that's right. You crossed it four times.
Yeah.
What led to that? And was that your longest run, or had you done some others before that?
No, that was my longest run. I haven't done 100 miler yet. I was in Zion 100 and it got canceled because of COVID. But so I had a friend reach out, and we had actually never met in person. We were just friends via a running club that we're both a part of. It's called Trip, and we do all these crazy challenges. Me and this guy, his name's Michael Greer, we have been teaming up on some of our other Trip members to try to beat everyone. And so we had been texting back and forth, and he finally asked me he asked me what my racing plans were. And I said, well, nothing now, everything's canceled. Mm-hmm. He said, well, why don't you come run the quad Grand Canyon with me? And I was like, yeah, no. And I asked him, I actually was like, how long is the list of people that have done that? Like, do people even do that? Because to me, it just sounded impossible. And he's like, well, the list isn't very long, but I don't think any females have done it. And I was like, oh.
And you started at the North Rim, if I remember right, which is, mm-hmm, most people start at the South. So they, is there, yeah, an FKT? There's an FKT for both directions.
There's not, because I don't think enough people do it. There probably is for R3, rim to rim to rim. There's probably two different ones. But I think just because the course is the same, I don't think it really matters if you start from. Hmm.
I wasn't sure. I did not look up the stats of that, but I've heard.
It's easier if you start from the south, because the south drops and then you kind of go, it's like a gradual drop. Well, actually, let's see. So you go up the north and it's a gradual climb the whole way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easier. It's just like 1,000 feet less vertical on the south end. So that's why people think it's easier to start from the south. To me, it's all the same. Like, you're still
right. Yeah.
So it doesn't really matter when you climb it, but I definitely think, I don't know. I don't think it would be any easier starting from the south, but people say it is. So I don't know.
The only thing would be is you'd have 1,000 feet less at the end when you retire.
So, yeah.
Because 1,000 feet after you've done you know, 60 miles is different than 1,000 feet after 40 miles.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm not convinced. I'd have to do it, I guess, to see if it was that much easier. Huh.
So your friend was the one who asked you about doing this. Did he then do it with you, or?
Well, so he attempted it last year and he was unable to finish it. He had some things that went bad and decided just to call it after two crossings, and he went home, and then he really wanted to go back and try it again, and he wanted the FKT as well for the men. So he was just trying to get some support, trying to get people to do it with him. So I told him I would think about it just because I knew he wanted someone to run with. I said, worst case scenario, I'll just pace you. And anyway, so he just kept bugging me and texting me, and I kept telling him, yeah, sure, I'll think about it. But really, I was like, yeah, there's no way. Because I had done R3 the year before that, and it was probably the hardest run I'd ever done. I was
R3 is like rim to rim to rim.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. My IT band locked up and I was like limping out. It was a terrible run. So I had PTSD from the canyon for sure. But yeah.
So, but running a canyon, you've got a whole, I mean, it's not like running, well, I would imagine Zion has got a lot of ups and downs too, but, you know, a lot of the trails that I've seen, you don't get like extended downhills and extended uphills.
Yes. That's a challenge with the Grand Canyon. Is any other race, the most you're going to climb is maybe 2,000 or 3,000 feet at a time. Mm-hmm. And the Grand Canyon, you're climbing 5,000 feet all at once. And then you have some flat in the bottom, but you got those monster climbs at both ends. And so that's tough. Another tough thing was just not having any aid stations.
Uh-huh.
Those 43 miles back to your car.
Right.
So that was tough. They did have water on two places in the canyon, so that made it a little bit easier. But
so was the water like at the bottom of the canyon?
Yeah, they had water in the bottom and they had water on the south rim.
Okay. Okay. So there wasn't like, if you got halfway up and were out of water, you were just kind of on your own.
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of people on the trail. Even in the middle of the night, we probably saw 10 or 15 people out hiking the trail.
Oh, really? In the middle of the night? Even?
Yeah. In fact, Mike, he actually ran out of electrolytes and he was doing pretty poor. And he ran across someone who had electrolytes and they gave him some stuff. And he was like, oh, it kind of saved this whole run. So,
wow. So you did run together then.
So he started on the south rim and I started on the north rim because he's from Phoenix. So it was a shorter drive for him.
Okay, right.
So we just crossed each other's paths four times. So that was actually really cool.
That's cool. So did he get, you said he was going for the FKT as well. Did he get it?
He did. He got it by, I think, 30 minutes or so.
Wow.
Yeah. So he was like 6 hours faster than me.
Excuse me. I've had a cough the last couple of days. So it's not.
Yeah.
I don't have a little button here like they do on the professional. With the radio, they have a cough button. So each of you got FKTs for the. So is the quad crossing, is it really that rare? I know I've heard.
It's pretty rare. Yeah. There's one guy that did an 8 times crossing. I don't know what they call that.
I remember hearing a story about that.
Yes. His name's Christoph. He crossed it 8 times. And so he had a 4-time record because he did it twice. And then I think there was maybe 2 other guys that were on there. So not very many people have done it. I actually remember when I was researching to see if any women had done it, there was an article, I think it was an Outdoor magazine, about a woman who had attempted it and she didn't finish. And then a woman way back in the 90s finished it and she did it in 30 hours.
Hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
I guess I had thought that there had been more people doing the quad crossing than that. I didn't realize the list was so short.
It's pretty short, yeah.
Well, it sounds like, especially for the women.
Yeah, for sure. Any elite could go and beat my time, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, there are so many FKTs around that, I mean, it was a fairly new concept to me when I started running. And, but now, especially this year, I've seen more and more reports of FKTs being set because people weren't running races.
Yeah, that in my, the place I work closed for 6 months. So I didn't have a job for 6 months. So
oh my goodness.
I had a lot of time to train for this.
So you weren't one of those people who ended up being sitting home being depressed. You had, you had plenty to do.
No. So I think I was sad for 2 days. And after that, I was like, well, time to go run.
Yeah. So how did you, what were the things that you did to prepare yourself for doing this quad crossing?
I focused more on vertical than mileage. I think I had 2 weeks. Well, I had 1 week where I hit 100 miles, and that's the first time I had even hit 100 mile week. But mostly I was trying to get the vertical in. And so my husband actually lives in New Mexico, but he lives about 30 minutes outside Durango. Okay. So I would drive like every other weekend to Durango. And then sometimes I'd just go up to Silverton and just run mountains up there. I did a 40 mile out and back on the Colorado Trail, and it was all over 10,000 feet. So I think that was probably my best training run that prepared me the most.
Okay.
It's easy to get fit in the mountains, even though you're going so slow. But then when you come back down to the desert, everything feels easy. So.
Yeah. And if I remember right, there's some elevation to, I mean, the North Rim, I can't remember what the elevation is, but it's not like the mountains of Colorado where you're.
No, I think it's like 8,000, maybe. I don't even know if it's that high, like 7 or 8.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and I mean, there's a big difference between 8 and 10,000 feet.
Yes, I know there is. But I was trying to remember when I, it's been a long time since I was at the North Rim of the Grand Canyon, but I did remember the air was a little bit thin there because where I live, it's, you know, we're 900 feet above sea level. So being up at 8,000 feet, I can tell the difference.
You can definitely. There's a marathon in Utah, actually. It's called the Tushers Marathon, and I did that. And that was tough, too. That was a good training run. It was, I think most of it's above 10,000. You summit Delano Peak, and I think that might be 11,000. I don't know. You'd have to check my facts on that. I can't remember. But I know it was above tree line, so
that's all. Yeah, that would be about, that.
And it was a tough race, so.
So what about the logistics of planning? What were the things that you had to think about taking with you and carrying? And did you, you had a crew.
So I'm pretty minimalist when it comes to carrying stuff. We actually, in the running club I was talking about, it's called Trip. We have a category called Hunger Strike, where we do an FKD for the snow distance without any food, no calories. So the only thing you can have is water.
Okay.
And at the time I had done 38 miles with no calories. So I don't usually even bring food. Like if it's over 30 miles, then I'll bring something. But for the most part, I don't really consume a lot of calories.
Okay.
I'll bring drinks. I'll bring caffeine, but I usually just drink water. And sometimes I'll do like, have you ever heard of those spring gels?
They kind of spring.
Baby food. Mm-hmm. I'll say those go down pretty good, but I don't feel like it helps me at all. I've tried both ways. I've tried fueling every hour and it really doesn't make much difference. I still feel the same.
Wow.
So
you were able to do like 100K with like eating maybe once or twice.
Yeah. So even the canyon, the Grand Canyon, I went the last 8 hours, I didn't eat anything. My stomach was just, it had turned it. That point, and I was hungry. I had hunger pains, but I just couldn't even think about eating. Just kept feeling nauseous. But
so you said you were feeling nauseous?
Yeah, but I knew I could make it at least 30 miles without food, so I wasn't worried.
So I've heard of people. I mean, who run? They talk about being fat adapted. So is that what you do with your diet? Are you more eating whatever you want?
I don't eat a ton of carbs. I naturally gravitate towards fattier stuff. And okay. That's kind of how I was born. Like I, from the longest I can remember, I just liked butter. So, and I don't, I actually don't even eat meat. I eat it occasionally, but not very often. So I just eat a lot of nuts. I eat a lot of fruit, and I know that's carbs. So I can't say I'm fat adapted because I do eat carbs.
Right. Well, there's, I mean, the fact that most people tend to have their diet is high in carbohydrates and low in fats. Yeah. So I, what I have found is that even if you're not doing the keto diet, if you're consuming more fats, your body tends to know how to burn fat a little bit better than if you're eating carbs all the time.
Yeah. And my body's just weird. Like if I eat any kind of really sugary stuff, like I can't do Tailwind or any of those drinks because it makes me dizzy for some reason. Like if I eat those little chewy sugary things when I'm running, I'd get so dizzy. It's weird.
Wow.
So I just don't even mess with it. I just don't eat. No, I actually ate mashed potatoes on my run. I got that trick from Courtney DeWalter and it worked great. And I do like pretzels and chips.
Okay. So you'd had those a little, did you take those with you then down in the canyon?
Yeah. Yeah. And I tried to eat 100 calories per hour, but I think it ended up being 100 calories every 2 hours.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, that's still, I mean, that's lower than what most ultra runners recommend. But
yeah, and I'm pretty small. I weigh 109 pounds, so I don't really need a ton of calories. So, but it's a trial and error thing. Some days I get really hungry when I'm running, and some days I don't get hungry at all. So
do you get, when you get hungry, do you feel like you're running out of energy, or are you able to keep going?
I can still keep going. I don't feel like I lose any energy. My stomach just feels empty.
Okay. Cause I know a lot of people once they've run out, they may not feel hungry, but they get this real lag in their energy because they've run out of.
Yeah. I always feel tired. So maybe that's the problem. I don't know.
It's not like you're going fast or not feeling it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the biggest thing for me is just resting before. I think that makes the biggest difference in my energy level is just taking a few days to just run really easy. The week before I made sure to sleep 8 to 10 hours every night, and I'm used to sleeping 6 or 7. So just banking up on sleep and rest, I think helped me more than anything as far as energy goes. And I, you know, lower my mileage, but I still eat the same. So I think my body just kind of stores up extra energy for that week.
Okay. Hmm. Oh, that's interesting. So did you have pacers that were helping you as you got into your later into your run?
I did. So I actually started out with two of my best friends. They had never done rim to rim. So they kind of wanted to go a little slower and enjoy it. So we stayed together maybe like the first 10 miles. And then I ran ahead. So I did almost the first pass alone. And then the second pass, I had another friend pace me. We didn't stay together the whole way, but most of the time we were together. He turned around a little early. So I got to the top by myself. That was actually kind of cool. Just getting to the South Rim for the last time and looking down thinking, okay, this is it. I only have 20 something miles to go and I'm done. So that was pretty cool.
Huh, so you did. You said you did the last pass across by yourself then?
I caught up to him. So you were together most of the time, yeah. And then my husband did the last 5 miles with me at the end. So that was pretty cool.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. So you had aid stations on both sides or just on one side?
Just on one side. So we had planned on doing one on each side, but one of his friends kind of fell through at the last minute, and then they couldn't get parking at South Kaibab, so they had to come down Bright Angel. So he got the FKT even with those 2 extra miles, which was kind of cool.
You said he couldn't get parking?
Yeah, so I guess you have to, you can either shuttle your way to South Kaibab or you can try to park there. I don't know what the whole, like, technical details were, but they ended up starting at Bright Angel. And the next time he came back up South Kaibab. Anyway, so it adds like a couple extra miles if you do Bright Angel.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, that's cool. So what other, I mean, you said this, your running group is, you call it Trip. What other crazy challenges have you taken on?
Oh gosh, there's so many. We do some stuff that's not even running related. We have one where we eat an entire pizza and we have to run a 10K afterwards. yeah, there's one that's called the quad double double, where you have to run a 10K to In and Out, eat two double doubles and fries, and then run another 10K. Okay. It's like silly stuff. We do some cool stuff too. Like, we do a week where we try to get the most vertical in a week.
Okay.
So we just do straight vertical for 7 days straight. We get as much as we can. So that was fun. We do challenges like No Rest November, where we run a minimum of 10K every single day in November. And then if you make it through all of November, you go into sudden death December, where you add 1K every day until you die.
Oh no. So until you can't go anymore.
Right.
So you start with 10K and then add 1K every day.
Yeah. And then we did a challenge where we had to run around the baseball diamond. So we had to run the bases as many laps as we could do.
How many laps did you get?
I think I had like 425. It ended up being like 20 something miles.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Around. The hardest part was just counting them all.
Mm-hmm.
So we had like little clickers where we would just click every time we ran the.
So you didn't get to change directions then?
No, I think we had to go the same direction.
Yeah, that would be tough.
Yeah.
Because especially for that kind of mileage, I mean, you'd put your, you'd have like stress on, because that's a pretty tight circle.
It's mindlessly boring for sure. But
yeah. So have you done any timed events? I mean, besides your challenge, have you done any timed races?
Like just actual races?
Yeah. Where they'll do like a 24 hour or a 12 hour.
Oh, I haven't done a 24 hour race. I think that would be fun.
Yeah. I've seen some. We did a timed race at the winter solstice. We ran from sunrise to sunset on a quarter mile track. And
that sounds like miserable fun.
Yeah. Yeah, but we reversed direction on at the top of every hour. So that helped. you didn't take one leg shorter than the other by the time you were done.
Yeah, definitely makes it better.
But that's cool. So I guess you said, one thing intrigued me. You said you ate an entire pizza. How big was the pizza?
I actually didn't do that challenge, but I watched someone do it and it looks painful.
It sounds painful. You have to
get a most bestest pizza from Little Caesars.
And bestest pizza. Okay. I don't go to eat at Little Caesars. So I'm not familiar with what that is, but
it's at Little Caesars. It might be, what's the place that you get pizza really fast?
High Five.
You can like drive through and get $5 pizzas, and they have like a most bestest pizza that has like the most cheese and the most everything on it. Oh, and it's a full size pizza.
So it's loaded. So it's a full size pizza, like 14 inch diameter or something.
Yeah.
Wow. that would be tough. So it's a timed event. I take it. You're timed on how fast you can eat the pizza as well as how fast you run.
Right. So you time it when you take your first bite.
Okay. Okay.
So the funny thing is like a lot of the guys that do these challenges, they're also ultra runners and they do 100 milers. And the people that do really well in the eating challenges do really well in 100 milers. And they think it's because they've done all these food challenges. Because you put your stomach through all that. I mean, 100 milers, nothing after that. You know?
Right. Yeah, well, for a lot of people, 100 miles is, I mean, you really are the exception, because most people say that a 100 mile race is an eating contest with a little bit of running thrown in.
Right. I know.
Well, and there's two people that I know that have had their races cut short because of because of food problems.
Yeah, because they can't get enough food. For sure.
And that happens more often than not. But does your group do beer miles?
No. I don't even think anyone drinks in our group.
Oh, really?
I didn't grab a charger. Yeah, so we have crazy challenges, but they're all usually food related. We did one where we had to eat a hamburger for every mile we ran that day. And I did 13.
Oh my goodness.
That's probably the most calories I've ever consumed during a run.
And the closest I ever came to was a taco run. It was a taco 10K. And so
there you go.
Every mile, I think it was every mile and a half, you had to eat a taco. There were four tacos total. So whatever 10K is divided up by four.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. Yeah. Kind of like that.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was spread out throughout the run. I think if you had to eat an entire pizza and then run, that would be.
Yeah. That's the hard part. I can do the ones where you have the whole day to eat all 13 mm-hmm. tacos or hamburgers or whatever. But if I have to eat it all at once, I'm out.
So what is ahead for you? What are you looking, what is your kind of goal races besides?
Right now I just have Zion 100 miler. So that'll be my first 100.
Okay. So did you get a deferment for that for this year or is that?
I did. Yeah.
So that'll be on tap for you next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's in April. So
how will Zion be different than the Grand Canyon? I mean, will that be,
less vertical, probably like 10,000 feet less vertical. And more miles.
Okay.
Slightly more miles.
More miles.
Yeah. Huh. But I don't know. Everyone says, well, that'll be easy after you've done the Grand Canyon, but I thought Javelina was going to be easy. So I'm definitely not going to go in thinking it's going to be easy.
Well, every race has its own challenges. I mean, each course is different. And
oh, for sure. Yeah. And I think honestly, the Grand Canyon, have you ever had a race where everything just went so smooth and you were just in a flow state the whole time and you knew that it was super rare and it would probably never happen again, but every once in a while it happens.
Every once in a while, I've never had a whole race be that way. I've had a few times I've been able to get into the flow state, but it usually didn't last for the entire race.
Yeah. Well, most of the Grand Canyon, I felt like everything just went so good and so smooth. And the whole time I knew, I was like, this is rare. This is not going to happen again. Mm-hmm. I'll probably never feel this good again. So there's no telling what's going to happen at Zion. Yeah. Cause I don't know if I'm going to be that lucky two times in a row. So
do you experience a flow state when your training runs? Is that something that's normal?
Sometimes. Yeah. I did an out and back on the West Rim Trail in Zion. Mm-hmm. Have you ever done that? Are you familiar with that at all? Mm-hmm. So you start at, it's a campground called Lava Point, and you run all the way across Zion, and you end up at the grotto, which is where Angel's Landing starts. Have you ever done any hiking in Zion?
No, I have not.
Yeah. So one of the most popular hikes is called Angel's Landing, and it's basically 2.5 miles straight up. So you end at the bottom, and then I turned around and I went back up and went all the way back to my car. So it was about, I think it was 35 miles.
Okay.
And probably 8,000 or 9,000 feet of vertical, but it's all, it's probably all below 6,000 feet.
Okay. And
just felt, after I'd been running in the mountains, it felt so easy. I was like, that whole training run was just a piece of cake. I love it when that happens.
Yeah. So is that something that you look for to try to do intentionally, or is it just something that kind of happens by accident?
I never know when it's going to happen. I never know. It just suddenly happens and I'm like, well, that was an easy run. Bank that away. Because a lot of times you like I think the 40 miler I did in Colorado, I was cussing and like, why do I even run? And you get in that negative headspace mm-hmm. where you're like, this is the worst idea I've ever had. So yeah, some of my runs, I think Tusher's was like that too, where I was like, I don't ever want to run again. Mm-hmm. Like, you'll never see me running again. And then I'm out running the next day. But
Yeah, I think all of us who are ultra runners have said that, you know, multiple times.
Yeah. Just,
why am I doing this? This is crazy. But so was that the entire run that happened to you, or were you able to kind of turn yourself around when you were thinking that, or was that like at the end?
I think it always turns itself around. I have noticed that whenever I feel terrible, I just think like I feel terrible right now and it's okay. And it's going to go away. And it always does. So mm-hmm. I always feel better a few hours later. Usually never gets worse. So,
and take it, since you said it was fairly easy, you didn't have anything like hallucinations or.
No, I wish. That's why I need to run another 100-miler. I've got to dive in on those hallucinations. I've heard those are great.
Never experienced those. I've had friends who've experienced them, but I've come close, but no.
I think my biggest hallucination was the night before when I was sleeping in my car and I kept waking up with all this like fear and dread, and I was just so nervous to try to even attempt it. And I just remember it, probably the most scared I've ever been in my life. I was just terrified. And I think I was half asleep, but I just remember feeling just so awful, like pure blackness. And when I woke up, it was gone. I'm like, oh, thank goodness that feeling went away.
So it was while you were asleep, you were afraid.
Yeah. So. I mean, I kept waking up and like kind of thinking through it and then going back to sleep, but it was just like, it was terror. Huh. Yeah. It was weird.
That's interesting. So when you were awake, you were had a little bit of doubt and
I was trying to process the terror, but it just like wouldn't go away. So I just went back to sleep to try to get it to go away. Mm-hmm. And it did eventually. So.
So I guess before you went to sleep, you didn't feel that level.
I was just nervous.
Everyone's nervous just before like a race.
Regular nerves, maybe a little more than regular. I think I did have a little PTSD, but I mean, nothing compared to like waking up in the middle of the night, but it was definitely anxious feeling, mm-hmm. but I like doing stuff I don't know I can do. Like going into something thinking that you have no idea if you can even finish. Mm-hmm. I like that feeling.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of ultra marathon runners, that's kind of what we're looking for is see where's our limit? You know, is this something that I can do?
And for sure.
Yeah. And in your case, you were able to do it. And it sounds like you did it in flying colors and
magic.
Set the FKT and something that not too many people have done.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing other women do it. I think it would be awesome if people would just go in and smash my time. I think it'd be
awesome. Well, there are more and more women who are running ultramarathon and excelling. I mean, you mentioned Courtney DeWalter. Mm-hmm. The Biggs Backyard was last year was won by a woman, and so it was a last man standing race. So it ended up being the last woman standing.
She's amazing. She is mind blowing.
Yeah. Well, thank you a lot for agreeing to talk to me, Crystal. I appreciate it. And I didn't ask you what you do. I mean, do you promote a business online, or is any way if people see this or hear this, to reach out to you, is there something that you have to?
Yeah, right now I don't have a business yet, but I'm currently in the Life Coach School and I would love to do any kind of free coaching. So if anyone wants free coaching, I need some good practice so they can just DM me.
Okay. Okay. So you're in Life Coach School.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll be certified in a few months, but right now I just want to practice and it's fun to coach people. So
yeah, that's cool. I was certified as a life coach a couple of years ago.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Cool. So that's kind of where the ultramarathon mindset kind of came in was that's the focus that I use for my life coaching is awesome. Developing an ultramarathon mindset. So
do you do a lot of coaching and just ultramarathon stuff?
Yes, that's kind of the, uh, you know, looking at runners, talking about the things that you, the things that you know, you don't realize, like the fears that you talked about in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. Some of those things come from limiting beliefs, and
yeah,
you know, you've probably studied this as well, that the things, the stories that you tell yourself get down into your subconscious. And oftentimes, you know, you were able to wake up and go, oh, that was not really real. That those fears, yeah. I'm going to go ahead and do this anyway. But for a lot of people, and for, you know, for, it was the case for my life as well. Those stories kept me from doing a lot of the things that I really wanted to do.
Yeah.
Or kept me from succeeding when I did try. And so, learning how to tell yourself the story to overcome those is a big deal. And
yeah. Isn't that awesome? Once you figure out that it's just your brain, and that's the only thing stopping you.
Yeah. And I said, I tell people this, the things that your mind tells you at 80 miles into a 100-mile race is the same kinds of things that it tells you when you're trying to take on any kind of big goal.
Yeah.
You know, you get to that point where your mind is telling you, hey, you can just quit. You don't have to do this.
Yep.
So, well, good luck. Cool. And so, yes, I'll have your contact. What's the best way to get a hold of you then? Through Facebook or?
Probably Instagram.
Instagram.
I don't get on Facebook very often, but I'm on Instagram pretty much every day. So.
Okay. Yeah, I have been using Instagram more as well, just because it's more fun. It seems to be more fun than Facebook. So
yeah.
You know, I love your pictures on your Instagram. The things that you share there and your pictures are.
Thank you.
It's great. So, I'll put the link to your Instagram account here on this when we're done. So.
Cool. Thank you.
Thanks for taking time to talk with me, Crystal. I appreciate it.
Yeah, nice to meet you.
Good luck with your running and with Zion next year and what you've got and with your life coaching.
Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Trail Talk. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider giving us a 5-star rating and review, and don't forget to subscribe. That way you won't miss out on any new episodes. If you'd like to contact me, you can find me on Facebook as @UltramarathonMindset, or you can find me on the web at theultramarathonmindset.com. Remember, your mindset is the key to success in running and in life, and developing a strong mindset is a skill you can improve. Hey, thanks again for listening. I'll see you next time.